There was a beard club, had a show, and Gaffbo was its name. Oh, G-A-F-B-O, R-A-D-I-O, G-A-F-B-O, it's Gaffbo on the radio.
We're not really on the radio, we're on the internet, but it's about the same thing, right?
Internet radio.
Oh.
Same level of professionalism involved.
At least the same level.
And fewer commercials.
Same level of professionalism as morning drive time radio.
Yes. Oh, but with more swears.
More fucking swearing.
No FCC staring over your shoulder. Swears. Watch your fucking mouth.
Shit the fuck, damn asshole.
Cockballs. Shit.
Fucker.
A shit fucker.
Cockball shit fucker.
Wow.
None of these comments actually portray anything that has to do with me, to say.
No.
I was invited to do this.
Oh. Shut the fucking face. Your fucking face.
Well, welcome back to Gaffbo Radio. This is episode 4. And we're hoping to be a little more timely from now on, but we all know how I am, so that's never going to happen.
Nobody cares.
I'm your host, Ian. Colonel Ian Walker of the Gaffbo Military. As always with us, Mr. John Buckler.
Greetings and salutations, my legion.
Admiral John Buckler.
Admiral John Buckler.
Also with us, Master at Arms.
Kyle Mustin. Yeah. Hi. Hello.
He doesn't like to talk very much, though.
I love talking.
This is the most you've talked on any of the episodes of Gaffbo Radio, you know that? Already. Okay. You've like tripled your talk time already.
I'll stop right now.
Okay.
Okay.
Please don't.
And
silky smooth voice.
Well, you know.
Can you do something for me? Can you say jazzercise?
Jazzercise.
Oh, damn.
I think I just came a little.
That was fucking awesome.
And also joining us for the first time on Gaffbo Radio, but a fairly longstanding member of Gaffbo, Mr. Kevin Rathbun. How you doing, Kevin?
Good. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you for coming. What, John, did you have anything you wanted to start off with tonight, or?
Well, we don't have any upcoming events, but I just want to give an introduction. This is a very special episode of Gaffbo Radio. The more you know. All
right. Imagine the stars sweeping across your screen right now.
But everyone has their own story as to how they either fell into the facial hair community or Gaffbo in particular. You've heard my story of my buddy went as Fidel Castro for Halloween, and it led to a bet as to who could grow the fiercest beard. Kyle, you grew a giant beard and shaved it off.
Because you're a dumbass. Then,
well, I've had like a full beard since like sixth grade. And
I'm a man's man. My name's Kyle Mustin.
I spend
all my time at the gym.
It's true. I've always had some sort of facial hair, and then I grew out like a year and a half worth of beard, shaved it, and then met John at a roller derby event. And I was like, "Hey, you have a beard. You should join my beard club." And then I showed up, and kept showing up, and. That's about it.
You want to know what's crazy? I don't remember you from your first meeting.
He was at the first meeting at Paul Revere's Tavern.
Yep.
Right.
This was the first time I met Kyle.
Yeah, because Kevin and I talked for a while, and that was about it.
Was that my first meeting?
I think so.
It might have been.
You came to the roller derby event.
I was at the roller derby event.
Yeah, and you came to Buddies with us afterwards.
Right. Yeah. So. Yes, and then I sat with you, Alan, and Kate.
Yes.
And we talked for a while there.
Yeah,
and then that's when I met Kyle, was at Paul Revere's
at
the next meeting.
It still blows my mind, though, that you were there, and I don't remember you being there. I don't remember you at all from
that. You were too stoked because you won the Member of the Month, and you were all sorts of, oh, my God.
I'm Member of the Month.
I said as much as I usually do.
Right.
So.
Well, you and I now, we talk pretty regularly at meetings and stuff.
Yeah, but I was
we know each other now.
I had a baby beard. I had a little beard then.
So did I.
You still do. Yeah.
Fuck you guys.
Whoa.
Wow. Just telling it like
I didn't
want
to say that, but I'm sitting too close.
I hate all y'all.
I know.
Okay, well, Ian, how did you get into Gaffbo?
Gaffbo was my introduction to the beard community in general. I've actually only gone to one competition outside of our area, and that was Ohio's Beards of Science event.
Science!
Science.
She blinded me with what?
Science.
Anyway.
Yeah, but Ian and I have known each other for a number of years now through a mutual friend.
Right. Well, actually.
Another co-founder of GAFBO.
Right. I used to work for Dave Bonin, one of the founders of GAFBO. And, you know, Dave and I worked together and we got to be friends. And through him, I met you, John, and I've seen you clean shaven, believe it or not, or damn close to it.
Yeah.
I've seen you with a beard shorter than mine right now.
Yeah, that was in my younger days.
It was a long time ago.
Not a smart person then.
But at some point when you and Dave really decided to have GAFBO as a regular club and meet regularly, I just started coming at Dave's invitation and have just never stopped coming.
Right. So that's the basic thing. But we have Kevin here has a very interesting story as to how or the reason as to why he keeps his long beard. Well, I guess now a partial beard due to an accident, but somewhat accident. But Kevin, we're just going to let you go ahead and tell your story, and we'll interject with questions when it comes on. So if you wouldn't mind just explaining why you have your long, beautiful,
luscious
red beard.
Well, to start with, when did you first grow a beard?
Oh, Kyle's talking about that. I think I had my first mustache when I was in like the seventh grade. And then, you know, I kind of had, you know, different versions of facial hair. I think everybody that would see me every 6 months would say, hey, you look different. And then, you get a haircut? And I'm just like, no, I shaved a different style of facial hair.
I did get a haircut, but
it was a facial haircut. So yes. There. And, you know, that was kind of something, you know, having facial hair in my family is not a abnormal experience for a lot of people that grow up in, at least in our culture, most of the time they don't see their dad didn't have a beard, their grandpa didn't have a beard, none of their uncles or cousins have beards. I come from a family with beards, so I mean that in and of itself was not you know probably anything all that spectacular, but you know I'll go through when I actually joined GAFBO, I had met Sue Ellen. In Bed Bath & Beyond. I was number one
recruiter.
I was going and I was doing a little shopping, and she said, there's some people you got to meet. And I'm just like, okay, very weird lady.
And who is this old 68-year-old little Jewish woman approaching me?
I'm sure she would take that perfectly the right way because,
you know. She's a strange lady. She's awesome.
No, but she came right up, you know, and she talks to me. And normally guys that look like I do, don't generally get, you know, women don't walk up to them and go, hey, I know some people that really like beards. And I'm just like, okay.
You're a 68-year-old woman with purple highlights in your hair.
You know, and tattoos and whatnot. So I don't know if she's, you know, on the up and up. But I check it out. She gives me the information. I go check out GAFBO. And, you know, and the first meeting that I go to is a thing that they'd planned with a sort of a thing with the Lansing Roller Derby girls.
Derby Vixens.
Derby Vixens, yeah. I'm terrible with names. Too many roller derby stories. But I was thinking about this, and
a common problem, no, I think, with most people.
But it's just like,
As we found out earlier, I'm terrible with names, too.
I went to the skating rink, which is something I hadn't done since I was probably 14. And I was like, I don't know. Should I go in? Should I not go in? I was like, oh, fuck it. I just didn't see anybody with beards. And then I saw John. I was like, okay, there's a dude with a beard. That's obviously there's going to be at least one more person with a beard, so I don't look like a weird freak walking in here, you know. So I went in there, and then
you looked like a weird freak. Weren't alone in your weird freak.
I met Lyman there for the first time as well.
That was Lyman's first meeting,
right?
Well, I didn't know Lyman was there.
So we went in. I went to there, and
I didn't go to this meeting. So
we then
it wasn't really a meeting. It was after, more of like
this event, right? Whatever.
It was. After the derby competition, went to Buddy's and. You know, and then, you know, we started having a conversation. This is where, you know, we kind of got to know each other. And, you know, I think Kate may have asked just, you know, a random question about beard. And I just said, do you really want to know? And it's like, obviously, everybody always really wants to know. So I started telling my story. I was, and I was just talking to John about this earlier. In 2003, the best that I can recollect right now without getting paperwork out, I was attending college, and I went to class on a Friday. I was very sick on Saturday, called my mom on Sunday, went to the doctor Monday morning, was in the hospital an hour and a half later. At that point, from that point on, I was in the hospital for 33 consecutive days, other than 2 days when I was out of the hospital because I was changing hospitals. And at that point, that's where the story kind of starts. I went into the hospital because basically I was running a fever of about 104.5 degrees. And I had had like a couple of days where I was just like vaguely coherent. And I went to the doctor and he said, you need to go to the hospital immediately. So I went to the hospital immediately in Lansing here, Ingham Regional. Went there, they thought I had a problem with my gallbladder. And so that, you know, that was kind of a relief. They had a good idea. They gave me my first CT scan that I'd had. Well, third in my life, but my first CT scan of this experience. And they looked inside of me and they thought immediately that I had cancer. And they wanted to get me to a specialist immediately. So I was there for like 3 days, I think. They put me on Demerol. I didn't sleep for 2 days, basically lots of hallucinations and no sleep. And finally I got transferred to a hospital, took an ambulance ride to Flint, went to Flint, Flint McLaren, and checked in, and they put me in a magnetically, you know, like heavy doored room for people who were having chemo. And they stuck me in there because they didn't really know what was wrong with me. And I was stuck in the cancer ward basically, and I was there. And then they within a short period of time, after they did another CT scan, my second CT scan, which for people that don't know is they pretty much inject you with a radioactive, or you drink radioactive, depending on which type it is. And then, you know, so I'm constantly ingesting radioactive material to find out whether or not I have cancer or not. They rule out
a really good way to discover if you have
cancer. Yes, right. By giving you more radioactive really elements. So I was in there and... at that point, they took a look at my liver and they said, wow, you've got some fucked up problems right here. We don't know what's causing them. So they did every test. They interviewed me about everything. At this point, basically, when I went to the hospital the first time, they packed me in ice twice because my fever was so high. I was losing fluid so quickly because I was sweating so bad that they basically had me on IVs and I was running through them so fast that the nurses thought that, you know, that, well, we, you know, you're going through these so fast, it's ridiculous. You know, if we've got this thing turned up and you're just sweating it right back out. So that was that process and the feel out process and everything. And, you know, so this is the point where I'm still fairly coherent about what's going on because they're basically not giving me so much pain medication as they're trying to diagnose what's happening. They're drawing my blood, I think, if I remember correctly, 6 times a day.
Wow.
I get woke up a couple of times a night, and that was early on because they were doing so many tests. And I think eventually it went back to like 3 times a day they were drawing my blood, and they couldn't really find anything going on with me. And so at that point, they were giving me a bunch of antibiotics, and my fever was stuck in the 102s, so they sent me home.
How long were you in the hospital?
The first time, about 7 days, about 7 to 10 days. And this is kind of fuzzy because the things that happened afterward kind of messed up my memory. So I went home, and the next day that I was home, I'm checking my temperature, and I checked my temperature, it's 104.3. So I go
right back up where it was.
Right. Yeah. So I call the doctor, and he actually, this is the cool thing about call services of good doctors, they actually get back to you. I waited on hold for like 15 minutes, and he got on the phone and said, okay, what do you want to do? And I said, I want to go back to the hospital, and I don't want to come out until we know what's wrong, because I don't want to die at my house. I said, I don't want this to happen. So I go back, I have to be readmitted through emergency in Flint. This time my parents drove me. So I went back to Flint. I'm there. We go through this process of, all right, we're not going to let you out until we can figure out what's wrong with you. So they started calling immunologists, and they started getting other people. And so I had this little team of doctors that were trying to figure out what was going on. And when I got back to the hospital, they packed me in ice again. because my fever is back over 104 when I got back
really
to the hospital.
Comfortable.
Yeah, it's great.
Real cozy.
It's wonderful. It's like polar bearing, but not having a choice about it. And you have to stay there. Right. It's just like you have to stay there. So I, at that point, they put me back in the cancer thing again, which is fine. But that's just where they had me. So they put me on that special floor because there's a different level of care there than there is in just general hospital rooms, generally speaking.
Not that in general hospital?
Yes, general hospital.
Okay.
Generally speaking.
Yeah.
The soap opera?
Right, okay. Exactly. So
care on that.
Your doctors had evil twin doctors. Yes. And
people die and they're in a coma. And then,
at least if you were in general hospital, you'd have a chance of coming back from the dead.
Right.
That's true.
Right. They could write you out of the story, though. That's always scary.
Right. Yeah, but then they can always write you back in like 30 years later.
Right.
And you haven't even
and you look
aged.
The same. That's the cool part
amazing.
About it.
Amazing. Yeah.
Right. And you have someone else's kids with you. It's fantastic. So I get to this point. And we're in the situation where I'm still in the don't know phase, and so I'm having another CT scan. They then do a liver biopsy where they basically take this really long needle and they basically plunge it into your stomach, and then they
ow.
All yeah, and that happened to me a couple times, and then they stick this little drainage tube because I've got these abscesses in my liver, and they run that between your ribs, and it's a fairly decently large tube, and that drains off fluid in between. So that's going on, and you know these things are happening. They're still trying to figure out what's wrong. I've got, I think I had 5 IVs in me at the time. I haven't eaten, by the way, since I've been in the hospital when I first was admitted. So I'm
like a week or more.
I haven't eaten in 2 weeks, and I haven't slept more than probably 3 hours a night because I'm in so much pain. And the pain medication that they're giving me is fair, but it's not that much. So I finally get to the point where
hardcore. A hardcore morphine
I don't really know because I have a fairly high pain tolerance, but I was so out of it from sleep deprivation and not eating and, you know, basically
it's kind of hard to
I just really didn't understand what was going on.
So you're saying if someone wants to understand what you're going on is to not eat for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
Don't
sleep very much.
Don't sleep and somehow give yourself a fever.
Yeah, that doesn't abate, and then basically have your stomach, you know, basically be inflated and very painful, like your skin is being stretched because you've got so much
I'm gonna pass.
Fluid on that. It's just kind of nasty. It's kind of gross. So to make things slightly worse, you know, this whole process is still going on. This is a long process. Like I said, it was 33 days total that I was in the hospital, and eventually it gets to the point where I have a PICC line in my arm, which basically means that the medication they're giving me goes directly into your heart, which your body absorbs it faster. So they're trying to kill whatever inside of me. They do a test. I have almost zero bacteria. I actually have zero bacteria in my body. Good bacteria, bad bacteria. They've killed everything, yet I'm still sick. Well, when I first went in the hospital, I had jaundice too. So I looked yellow, and I didn't even know it because my liver was shutting down because my liver almost failed. So this is the kind of the thing that was going on. It was fairly stable, but I wasn't getting any better. I kept having the same issue. So eventually, my doctor's, I have a surgeon, and he says, well, you know what? We need to go inside and look and see what's going on. And I'm just like, okay, I'm all for that because this really blows. And at this point, I have a surgery. And by the way, during this process, I'm still having CT scans. So I think I'm at my like number 12 by now.
Jeez.
So we're in the process of now. If I'm not going to get cancer at some point in my life, it'll be a miracle because of all the radiation I've had put in my body. So we get to the surgery. I have the surgery, and effectively what happens is they redact part of my liver. They cut off part of my liver. Interesting part of that story is when I went into the surgery, I had 7 IVs in me, and one of them caused a swelling in my neck where my neck swelled up basically the size of at least of a golf ball, and it nearly choked me to death. And so I almost died before surgery ever happened. So then I had the surgery. I got out of surgery, got the drainage tube between my ribs, hurts like hell, got a scar that runs basically from my solar plex down to below my navel. So I got a good 14-inch scar. They basically opened me up, looked at everything, removed my appendix while they were in there, just for shits and giggles, I guess.
You don't need this anymore.
It's not taking up space.
Not like it was a liver, you know. So they go through all that, have that done. And when I get out of the surgery, I'm on a morphine drip. And the little morphine drip thing is basically you push a button, you can push it every so often, it's supposed to drip in your thing. Well, I'm going at this thing like Pac-Man. I'm like, this shit ain't happening. I said, I don't know what the hell this stuff is, but it isn't doing anything. And also, you know, you get the surprise catheter put in you. You've got to love that one, too.
Oh, yeah. That's
a surprise catheter.
You're like, hey, wow, I've got a tube shoved up my ureter thing. And so I wasn't even awake for it. Thanks.
That was the most pleasant part of your trip, from what I hear.
Did they shave you just to be nice?
I have no, just I couldn't funsies. See. I couldn't get my head, I couldn't look that, I couldn't even, I couldn't pick my head up. So I go through the, and then, so I said, this isn't working. So they put me on this magical drug called Dilaudid. Mm-hmm. Now Dilaudid is basically a synthetic heroin. And then, so I'm on Dilaudid now. And this is the time where things get interesting.
I'm on heroin and that's when it gets interesting.
And so you I'm supposed to be recovering. I got to keep the pain down. Fine, that's cool. I understand that. Dilaudid is a extremely addictive drug. It's very difficult for people to understand what it's like to take heroin. But I think I have a fairly good idea without actually, you know,
having actually taken heroin. You had the needles in your arms and you were on drugs. You just weren't doing heroin.
I basically had the tube already stuck in me and somebody mainlining it into my IV right in, going straight to me. So basically it was fairly intense. Now the interesting side effect was it totally wiped out my memory. Really wiped out my memory, like not being able to remember where people were still alive or not alive, people from my past, you know,
like
when did
long,
I...
Long term this has done this?
I would say what happened is it was selectively erase my ability to connect to that event. So in other words, let's say I met John in last summer. Then this happened, and then I don't remember John at all. Then John walks up to me and says hi, and I say, oh my God, that's John. I totally forgot about that guy. So that's kind of the effect that it had on most of my memories that I had. So I'd be like, where's so-and-so? And they're like, they're not alive anymore. I'm just like, ah. Oh. Now I remember.
But as soon as you're told it
a lot of it would come back. Some stuff I have no recollection. I don't have any connection to. It's like, I don't know what year, like what happened in 1997. Not really sure. Now, I know a lot of things that happened. Well, I'm just saying, it's like, I know what happens, but I wouldn't be able to remember what happened in 97. I'd remember events in 97, but I couldn't put that stuff together. So the story comes back around is that while I was in there, I lost probably 45 pounds. So I looked really skinny, you know, skinny as I'd ever been in my life and worse because my face was just sunken. I had no body fat. So I hadn't eaten.
So you looked extra sexy.
Oh, yeah, I looked great. and being in the cancer ward, you know, after a certain period of time, I got up and I could start walking around. Well, this is when I started making connections with people who were on extreme chemotherapy. Most of them were dealing with end-of-life issues. And I started meeting people, and then after 24 hours of meeting them and having a conversation with them, because I'm walking around my little IV thing, you know, because I need to get up because I can't stand sitting in the bed anymore because it's almost as less painful to walk around. People were dying. I'd meet somebody, and then the next day they'd be gone. And I'd meet somebody else. I'd know them for a couple of days. I'd meet their family and talk to them. And then they'd be gone.
It's got to be hard.
And then this went on for several days. And I started to orient my thinking slowly. And I, you know, maybe I didn't realize I was doing it, but I was still doing it. And, you know, my brother-in-law passed away from cancer when I was a sophomore in high school. He was basically my best friend. And he died of throat cancer, and I watched this happen to him, and I could see what I looked like, and it totally reminded me of exactly what he went through. He was a 6'3", 200-pound guy who went down to like 110 pounds. I mean, just, you know. And then I was seeing all these people, and this is exactly the same thing had happened to them. And then I looked at myself in the mirror, kind of, you know, and I could see that I looked like somebody who should be dead. And I was meeting all these people, and, you know, none of them had hair. Because side effect of chemotherapy, most everybody loses their hair. I met, you know, people with wigs, people wearing hats, shower caps, whatnot, but a lot of them had no eyebrows and whatnot, and some of them were just gone. I mean, they would just be gone. They'd be there and then it'd be gone. And, you know, the only way that I felt like I could, because my memory was shot, terrible. I was having a hard time remembering things, you know, just little snippets of people, you know, like best friends, real strong connections with people like mom and dad, brother, sister, you know, best friends. I could remember those people. Other people on the peripheral couldn't remember them. And I had a feeling to myself, I don't want to forget these people. I said, I may forget everything else, but I don't want to forget these people. So when I got out of there, my beard had obviously been growing. And I just mentioned to John earlier, which I'd totally forgotten, that a nurse had came in and shaved part of my beard for me when I was in the hospital. And when I got out of there, I let my beard start growing. You know, and that hair was a tangible link to the people who had no hair and who were not, you know, they didn't survive the situation. I was a lucky person. I did not have cancer. Didn't mean I didn't almost die like four or five different times, but I didn't have cancer. But the only way I could relate to those people and remember them in my mind is I needed a physical, tangible element that held me to that belief that I couldn't forget those people. I couldn't forget that experience. I didn't want to forget that experience. I want to have something that I would see every single day, a visual reminder. You know, I could have got a tattoo. You know, I could have done something like that, but that wasn't something in my head. The beard was what was in my head. So I did that. And when I got out of there, you know, I think I let my beard grow for almost 2 years. And then I trimmed it. And I saved it. I still have it. You know, I didn't get rid of it. But, and then I thought about it, and I was just like, it's not the same to be able to, you know, it felt okay. But at the same time, I realized that I would never, ever be clean shaven ever again, because that was became more, it's part and parcel. It's who I am. It's what I believe in. So, you know, I've had a few things happen. I cut it back for a wedding one time. You know, I caught on fire one time at a Christmas party and burned a big section out of the middle of it. Somebody blew a candle out and the wick landed in it, caught it on fire. So, you know, I square cut it off then. You know, I've square cut it off a couple of times, a little bit here and there. But this last one, I think I've had it now for over about 2.5 years, I think. Pretty sure this time. Then I had to cut the sides a little bit because I had to have, I've got family skin issues. So I had to have something looked at on my face. So I have to keep that kind of fairly uncovered. So, you know.
They can't really biopsy for melanoma.
You can't really look very well. Yeah. They shave you when they want to look for stuff. You know, it's like, hey, I want to look for that. Shave, shave, shave. So it's just like, it was my choice to take it, and I don't mind doing it. It's, but you know, the guys that are here can see it, but it's a beard, but it's, there's a, and it's like, it's partial, but mostly there.
Your cheeks are pretty shaven, but for, like your chin and the lower part of your cheeks, and then down most of the way down.
It's got about a foot chest, there or something.
Yeah. So,
and for anyone who may have been there, at Ohio's Beards of Science.
True.
Kevin did take second place in the partial beard behind Miletus.
Yep. Which was my first real beard competition.
All right.
Bigger
beard competition. As opposed to those fake beard competitions.
Yeah, against the Whiskerinas. I can't compete against them. They have lights and planes and trains and automobiles. It's unbelievable.
And vaginas.
You can never compete with that, John.
No, you can't.
Nope.
Compete for it, but not.
So what did they end up finding out about you in this whole process? As much as I love the story about the beard, now I'm really invested in wanting to know what was wrong with you.
You know, and you know what, Ian? I want to know too, but there was never any official diagnosis of what was wrong with me other than the fact that after they cut off part of my liver and gave me enough antibiotics to basically kill everything, even the healthy bacteria in my body,
sure,
I started to get better. And I did not have a relapse. And then I had to have 2 more CT scans after that. So I've had a grand total, I think, of 14 is best. I haven't counted them up specifically, but I did count to 14 in my medical charts that I had during the process. So if you turn the lights off and I glow, don't be surprised. You know,
the black light. We're definitely turning the lights off later.
Well, you know.
It's a sexy party here.
I was going to say, you're the only person I know that's had more CT scans than me. I've had 4 or 5.
He's also the only person wearing pants.
Well.
Yep. True. Sorry.
So, to answer your question, I wish I had a good answer for it. All I know is that I was, I know that the doctor said, well, I'm writing you up in a journal as an interesting case study. And I'm just like, cool. Do I get any money for that? No. Great.
Of course not.
But basically it comes down to like there was something with your liver. That much seems to be like
intentional. Right? I mean, that's the thing, and it's, people say liver, that's hepatitis. It's like, no, it's not. It's not hepatitis because I didn't have hepatitis.
Not lupus.
No. And
no matter what the billboards all around Lansing lead you to believe.
For some reason.
That was supposed to be a house. Joe, I didn't even watch House ever.
No, I don't watch crap.
Yeah.
That's actually pretty entertaining.
Yeah, that's what everyone who likes that show says. It's really good.
I don't know if it's really good.
He makes three wrong diagnoses and then the right one, and he's a dick. It's awesome.
I don't know if it's really good, but it's kind of fun. Anyway,
whatever.
It's a running thing it's never lupus. It sucks. Someone always says lupus, and he's always like, it's not lupus.
I like Hugh Laurie, but fuck that show.
He also does a good American accent.
He does.
He does. It's impressive.
It is. It's quite entertaining, actually.
So it wasn't lupus.
Did your doctor, Kevin, have a fake American accent a fake British accent? Or was it Patch Adams?
Clown shoes and all.
Patchcord Adams from Futurama.
I would not say where he was from, for sure, but I believe he was Indian. One doctor was, and then the other one was, he went to school at U of M, and he was my sort of the epidemiologist, immunologist guy who finally came up with the right antibiotic cocktail that apparently did some sort of miracle jazz, and kind of came up with whatever it took.
Wow.
So, a long story short, I left the hospital not being able to walk because my feet had atrophied so bad that I could, the thing I said when I was walking around the thing, let's say I was hobbling and kind of stumbling down the hallway to try to get my feet to loosen up, and my feet were so cramped up that my toes were in like crepitus where they were bent over, so I had to kind of like relearn to walk. They wanted to put me in like occupational therapy, if somebody who's 85 years old has hip surgery, they want to put you in like 6 weeks in a facility to teach you to do all this stuff again. And I was just like, no, I just want to go home. It's like I've had enough. I've been in this hospital too long. I don't want to be around any more people. And then after that was over, I had 6 months. I think I was on antibiotics for another, 8 months after I left the hospital, just in case. I had 2 CT scans after I left the hospital as follow-ups. And I had to take intravenous IV stuff. I had a home nurse coming in every day for a while. And I still had my PICC line in. And I had to self-inject, not into the IV, not directly into my arm. So you have these little mate things where you have a male and a female part and they go together and you still inject yourself. So I was doing that too. You push heparin through to clear out your PICC line, and then you inject yourself with in your IV with antibiotics. And I did that, I think, for almost at least a couple of months. Once again, the memory's kind of fuzzy, but I know it was for at least, I think, about a month and a half after that. And then antibiotics destroys your ability to be out in the sun. So
you're a pale guy to begin with.
Yeah, so. Ian and I look like we, belong in an Irish Spring commercial, but that's
all I wash with.
That's the pastiness that's sitting on the couch here.
It's blinding against that black.
Yeah, so I got through all that. I was, I looked awful.
Look awful.
Yeah. With purpose. So I went through all that, and I guess the beard story is that I didn't realize how personal beards were to people until I met more people that had beards in there. I mean, there's a lot of hassle that you can be put through just for having a beard, for work and for just significant others and people who just say random stupid shit that annoys you,
You actually have a longer beard than Billy Gibbons does.
Yeah, but the ZZ Top thing just...
Yeah,
gets old. It's so obnoxious.
Yeah.
Every girl's crazy about a sharp-dressed man, John.
No.
I am wearing khakis.
So you are wearing pants.
And slippers.
Right.
I just put on the pants.
You just need the smoking jacket and the ascot now.
I do have an ascot at the house.
Why don't you wear that every day?
I wore it to Dickens Village last year. But Mostly because they're really uncomfortable.
Oh, that'll do it.
Yeah.
That's why I don't wear pants.
Mostly because they're really uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Mostly.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know how we continue after a story like that. So
they say whatever you want.
Actually,
well, John and I were talking about this a little bit earlier, and it's like some stories about, like, I could ask Ian while he's wearing a beard, and he's just like, I like beards. Or he could say something that's very personal. Right. For me, my story is neither overly personal or anything.
I think that is a really personal story.
Well, but it's my story. And I mean, to me, it's like I can explain it to people, and they're just like, well, so that's why you have a beard. And I'm just like, you asked, you know, it's no different than why does John have a beard? He can tell the story. It may have a different sound to it or different quality, but to me, it's just as interesting. For me, it's normal.
Yeah.
For other people, it's something else. For me, it's completely normal. And, you know, I just don't like it when people harp on the fact, you know, that having a beard is somehow, you know, contrarian or counterculture or bizarre. And I'm just like, to me, it's just like, it's as personal as why you had plastic surgery. It's as personal as why you got braces to fix your crooked teeth. It's as personal as why you wear contacts instead of glasses, whereas Ian and I are both sitting here with glasses on. So it's
and
like,
I have contacts.
Those, yeah, so those stories.
Kyle's really vain.
Or they're exactly the same thing. So to
he
me.
He does spend all that time in the gym.
Yeah.
And wears short shirts that are too small. But that's okay.
Yeah. It's okay.
Too lazy to buy new clothes.
Show off those guns.
It's my pecs and my guns get bigger. I just can't afford new shirts.
If you flex your biceps lady. Right now, I think you will rip the sleeves on that
but
shirt.
But the rest of the shirt fits. Okay. I'm going home.
Yeah. Well, to me, it's... and this is a conversation I've had before. I mean, at a certain point, a beard is just hair. It's just a hairstyle. And it happens to be one that we all really enjoy having for one reason or another. Honestly, you said you could ask me this story. I don't really have that much of a story. I like having it. And to me, it's become part of my identity. So it's sort of like I don't ever plan on being clean shaven again. But, you know, not all of us have like something that as big your story is.
But here's what's different. All right. So we all have facial hair, and there are a million different reasons as to why you first
absolutely
grew it. But the reason why we all keep it is the connections we've made with it is, I think, like what Kevin is trying to get at. Kevin may have the most interesting origin story, much like Batman has a really interesting origin story. Superman has had 87 different origin stories.
Spider-Man's origin is real good, too.
I think Spider-Man's a stupid.
I got bit by a spider, now I have powers of a spider.
But whatever. That's me.
It's better than Superman's origin, that's all I'm going to say.
At least Superman's run down the fucking planet. Whatever. We're not going to get into this now. But okay.
I hate Superman, so.
That's fine. But it's not so much why you grew it in the first place. It's the connections you make with it. For me, I grew my first beard, like giant beard, in a drunken bed. I grew my first beard because I could.
Absolutely.
But like the first right. large beard I grew was like, you're going as Castro. That's great. I want to grow a big beard. As soon as we did that, and there was a group of us that had giant beards that we grew together, there was a camaraderie that came out of it, and there was a community aspect and a group aspect. And Kevin makes a connection with the people that he was going through a difficult time with at the hospital, and now he's found, I mean, I assume that... You found people that you like in GAFBO. You keep coming back.
Well,
I mean, it's whether it's because you like us or because we pay you.
There's a few.
You know, it's not so much why you grew a beard in the first place. It's why you keep the beard, and it's the connections you make, and just, I mean, I don't know. Is that...
It's come to mean something, I think, to everyone in this room. Whether you grew it for a very significant reason like Kevin's story, or if you grew it for a just because reason, kind of like me, it's come to mean something, I think, for every person in this room.
Yeah.
And everybody in GAFPO and everybody you meet in the beard community, it's the same thing.
And I think that people that have had beards off and on for a longer period of time, beards have kind of become more socially acceptable.
Sure.
Yeah.
At this point than even than they were, I would say, even 3 years ago. I mean, that's just my reading on it.
Definitely.
I don't know if necessarily more... Well, yeah, more... No. More fashionable these days.
Yeah, I think that there's been more of an acceptance and more of... Maybe it's cyclical. I don't know, but sure.
It is very cyclical.
There's been...
But it's been a long period of time. It's been like 100 years since...
Right. Last, like, I mean, there's such an association, like, you know, with the 60s that if you had a beard, you were a hippie. Well, you know... I come from a family where they still had beards and facial hair.
I hate hippies.
And so you get this look where, you know, it's never kind of went out of style in certain communities. It's sure. always been there. And so it's just like it was just something you did, but then you went other places and everybody looked at you kind of funny. And I think that when I first heard about GAFPO, I just thought to myself, well, that's really cool. You know, that's a really cool thing. I'm just like, I never really thought about that I would have things in common with people just because we had beards. And the amazing thing is that because we have beards, we've dealt with certain things, and you kind of have to have a little bit of something to deal with the fact that there's going to be people that are just going to hate on you because you got a beard.
Thicker skin.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they just got to hate on you. And just like, if you can't handle it, you'd shave your beard off. You know, if somebody said at work, you're not going to get a promotion if you don't shave your beard off. And you're just like,
okay,
you're going to be gone in 3 years and I'll still be here and I'll have your job. So whatever, because I can still do my work even though I have facial hair. Big shocker. You know, and so, you know.
Wait. You can do work with facial hair?
I don't want. It's crazy.
Don't tell my wife.
Well, I've been faking that limp.
Is my knee will never get better.
My knee will never get better.
Oh, I can't get out of bed. Please, breakfast, bed. Oh, God. I can't take the garbage out. Oh, I feel terrible. My beard is in the way. Well, I can't do the dishes. My beard gets in the water. Do you want my beard on the dishes? No.
Yeah, I tried that once, and my wife said, why don't you just use your beard to wash the dishes? And it's like, oh, backfired.
Man, she's smarter than I am.
And then I just left a bunch of beard hairs on the dishes. And I don't wash them anymore.
I have a dishwasher.
Yeah. Look at me, Mr. Fancy Pants with a dishwasher.
Hey, it's the first.
Fucking millionaire.
Right.
Rub it in, Ian. Right. Rub it in.
You can still have millions of dollars in other currencies. You'd be fine.
I wish I had millions of dollars.
Monopoly dollars.
Monopoly money.
All right. Well, Kevin, I want to thank you very much for sharing your story. And I don't know. Thank you to Ian and Kyle for being here as well. But Kevin, I appreciate you joining us and telling your story.
Thanks. I was glad to do it. And I if anybody...
You know, now your story's forever on the internet.
Yeah, you know, if everybody ever, you know, thinks about whether or not they should cut their hair into a mohawk, or whether or not they should let their sideburns grow, or whether or not they're going to do this stuff. You know what? If you're doing it, just do it. Right. You know, if you've got a reason for doing it, and the people that actually matter and they hear that reason, they'll respect it, and they're not going to treat you like a crazy leper. You know, they're just not going to do that. So, you know, by all means, you know, let your hair flag fly, and don't be afraid to do it.
Got to finish on that note.
Yep.
Thank you.
Yeah. So, hopefully we'll be back with more GAFPO Radio fairly soon.
Yeah. I'm going to be recording a podcast with Mike O'Connor when I'm in Portland in a couple of weeks.
So. Fantastic.
Mike is not only a
big... He's consummate gentleman.
He's a big figure in the beard community, but on top of it, he is as nice as he seems on Whisker Wars. I would say, right? I mean, for those of you who haven't met him, who've only seen him on
TV show. One of the nicest people you'll ever meet.
And he's a fun conversation every time.
I'm also going to propose the fact that Kevin's last line become our tagline that we finish all shows on, let your hair flag fly.
Yep.
Hair flag or beard flag?
Whatever, man. Whatever floats your boat.
Feel free to do whatever you want to do.
Let your beard flag
fly. Let your beard flag fly.
Sounds good.
All right.
The sentiment is the same.
Ladies and gentlemen, let your beard flag fly.
Gaffbo Radio.